This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later, we'll be talking about 100 years of flight. But first, your elected officials in Washington, in the House and in the Senate, have been trying to pass a new energy bill for 3 years now without success. And their work is not without its critics. How about the milder critics? Well, it's just the same status quo as before. It's nothing new in this energy bill. The harsher critics, well, they go something like this. How about an editorial in the New York Times calls the House and Senate bills lacking in imagination and political will? A little tame. Here's this from the Washington Post. There are disasters, there are fiascos, and then there is the Senate energy bill. Now, the blackout, the rising prices of oil and gas, so they've all put renewed pressure on Congress to pass an energy bill, but will it, in its present form, do very much to take away from our reliance on foreign oil and reduce pollution and greenhouse gas emissions? Well, they said they're going to pass it today. They said they'll have it passed by the end of the month. But will it do anything to reduce this reliance that we have on foreign oil and people asking to get rid of greenhouse gases? Will it do anything to relieve that problem? This hour, on our energy update, we're going to look outside the box, perhaps outside the beltway, to some suggestions from you and some suggestions from people who are thinking a little bit differently. A group that has been called a coalition of tree huggers, sidebusters, and cheap hawks. And joining me now is the head of this group. He's Reed Detchin. He's executive director of the Energy Future Coalition. He joins us from our NPR studios in Washington. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Ira. My wife's a huge fan of your show, listens to it every week.
Thank you. And that quote comes from the USA Today. And who is it attributed to? Are you familiar with that one? A coalition of tree huggers, sidebusters, and cheap hawks?
Absolutely. That comes from one of the members of our advisory council, former CIA Director Jim Woolsey.
Now, it's interesting. You have an interesting coalition of Democrats, Republicans, conservatives. Tell us who they are.
Well, the Energy Future Coalition is a public policy initiative supported by foundations, bipartisan, as you mentioned, that tries to bring together leaders from business, labor, and the environmental community to see if we can identify options that we can agree on that would move us forward on some of the challenges you referenced at the top of the show. Number one, reliance on global oil from the Middle East, where the region is obviously volatile. Number two, the risk of climate change. And number three, the fact that 2 billion of the world's poor people, one-third of the world's people, lack access to even the most basic modern energy services, electricity, that they need to economically advance and make a better lives for themselves.
What don't you find in the present energy bills on Capitol Hill that don't do the job for you?
I think that it's fair to say that the energy bills, whatever their merits or demerits, don't tackle those topics really at all. I think at the end of the day, we will be just as dependent on foreign oil as we were if the bill were not to be passed. And clearly there is no attention paid to carbon dioxide emissions that contribute to global warming, and not any thought given to the problem of access to energy by the world's poor.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the carbon dioxide emissions. You suggest something called sequestering them, storing them underground. Is that correct?
Well, one of the interesting facts about global warming is that we could burn up all the oil and gas on Earth, and over the next 100 years, the concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere would be about double what they are today, which would be bad, but the real kicker is coal. So we have to figure out what to do about coal. That's what would drive those emissions off the charts. And there's a lot of coal in the world, not just in the U.S., but in India and China. If they develop and use that coal the way we have historically, there is grave danger for the world's climate.
And the technology then would be to remove the CO2 before or after it's burned?
Well, the idea is this, Ira. You can gasify coal, literally put it into a chamber, heat it up, and turn it into a gas, and use that gas to produce power. But in the process, it's possible to separate out the carbon dioxide, and in certain applications, they've already shown that you can take that carbon dioxide and literally pump it underground into oil and gas reservoirs or other underground formations and store it there for hundreds, thousands, perhaps even millions of years.
What about the sulfur and the soot that comes from burning coal?
Well, actually, the gasification process takes those out largely as well. So this would really be what some people call an oxymoron, a clean coal technology.
That's not in the energy bill, then, you're saying?
There is actually some support for the clean coal technology, and the administration, interestingly, has initiated a project called Future Gen, which would be a state-of-the-art coal generation plant that would be a zero emissions plant, basically capture all of this pollution and store it as a demonstration. We think that that's a step in the right direction, but we think that it needs to be done much more aggressively because the problems that we see from climate change are so urgent that we need to get started now.
But the administration doesn't admit that there's a problem from greenhouse gases, that there is global warming even happening from human burning of these fossil fuels. So how are you going to convince them that then you should store something they don't think is a problem?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Even some of the participants in our group, and Boyden Gray, who's former White House counsel to former President Bush, is one of our steering committee members, and he personally remains a little skeptical of the climate science, which I would not say the rest of the group generally does. But in any case, he, for example, sees the value of taking some of these steps, a prudent, responsible thing to do, because if you're wrong about climate, if in fact the dangers are as severe as the scientists are telling us that they are, that these emissions stay up in the atmosphere for 300 or 400 years, you can't just turn around at a snapshot there. Mm-hmm. You have to, if we're going to be prudent about this, we have to get the technology in place that will allow us to change our course without doing undue damage to our economy.
What about other technologies like solar and wind power? We now have wind power available at 4 cents a kilowatt hour being generated all over the world. Why not the call for some of that stuff?
I think that solar and wind and other forms of what are called distributed generation are very exciting options. They're going to develop over time. They are not now as cheap as conventional energy, and so not everybody's going to rush out.
They are in some places as cheap as – Europe certainly has been using it for a while, cheap as conventional energy over there.
Well, I think that that has to do with the tax structure and so forth in Europe. In this country, generally speaking, you have to pay a couple cents more a kilowatt hour to get energy from wind. Mm-hmm. But that difference has been changing. There's new technology developing in that area, and I think that certainly that'll play a much larger role in the future.
What about cars, bringing back the fuel efficiency down in cars? The administration has failed to require or asked for that to happen.
Well, you know, the big argument about cars over the years is that we want them to be more fuel efficient, but Detroit says that when they make that kind of car, people don't want them, they don't buy them, they're too small, they're too dangerous, et cetera, et cetera. What's really exciting, Ira, is this new hybrid vehicle technology like the Toyota Prius or the hybrid Honda Civic that allow a combination of electric drive and gasoline engine use and literally double the fuel efficiency of the car, but still give the consumer the same kind of product that they're accustomed to being in.
Are we then going to be in the same position we were back in the 70s during the energy crisis when Detroit failed to come up with a smaller, more fuel-efficient car until the Japanese came in and did it for us, and then they were left holding the bag, so to speak?
Well, certainly the Japanese have taken the lead in this area, but we're quite excited about a proposal that the United Auto Workers came forward with in the course of our process, and it's indicative of the involvement of organized labor in our process, which we're very proud of, to have incentives for Detroit to change over their assembly lines from conventional vehicles to these hybrid vehicles, and combine that with some consumer tax incentives to get this into the marketplace, get people accustomed to this new technology so that they can compete on its own.
1-800-989-8255. What about putting more money into mass transit? I read recently that the regional rail in Philadelphia SEPTA was threatening to cut some bus lines because they said they can't afford to keep the lines up and running. Should we be moving away perhaps from cars in these big cities together and instead, you know, investing more in rapid transit, mass transit?
Well, I certainly use it myself, and I'm a big fan of mass transit. I think that more ought to be done in that area. But if you look at it in a national sense in the United States, there are only certain places where it applies efficiently, and it's not likely to make a huge difference in our energy consumption. Good to do where it's possible to do. But I think that a more promising way for us to reduce our oil consumption is to literally move away from oil, use alternative fuels. We need at this point to turn to our farmers, literally to grow our own fuel, some of the crops that are being grown, convert them to ethanol and use that in greater quantity. That has a promise of a significant reduction in our oil use.
What about a hydrogen future?
I think a hydrogen future is very, very promising, but I don't think it's going to happen in the next couple of decades. I think that the technology hurdles that need to be overcome, not just in producing an affordable fuel cell vehicle, but in making the hydrogen available wherever people want to drive, I think that's a very formidable challenge, and I think it's going to take us a while to get there.
Well, for a lot of these things are not in the president's energy bills under being under consideration. What's a citizen to do if they want to, you know, to let their congressperson know that this is an important thing and these alternatives are important for them?
It's a very good question. You know, when people talk to public officials about these questions, what they often hear is the response, well, that's very interesting, but I just don't ever hear about it when I go back home. I don't think anybody needs to be an energy expert to address this issue and just express their concerns. Why is it that we are more dependent on imported oil today than we were in 1973 when the Arab oil embargo occurred? What are we doing about the threat of global warming? This is something that could change the world for our kids and grandkids. I think those kinds of questions to public officials are all that's needed to get Congress moving in the right direction. If they believe the public is concerned, there are plenty of answers out there that would be perfectly good for the economy, good for job creation, and tackle these problems besides.
And with email these days, it's pretty easy to fire off an email to your Congress.
Well, there's no substitute for human contact. I think some of those emails go into a permanent revolving file.
So you want us to phone in. Is that what you want?
Well, phone in or catch them while they're home. Just go to the town meeting and say, what's going on here, folks?
But they're saying they're going to have this bill done by, they said today, that the Republicans and Democrats said, we're going to have this done by the end of the month. Do you believe that?
I think it's probably going to be a little more difficult than that. I think it's pretty likely that they will come to a conclusion before they go home at the end of the year. But I think that there's an opportunity to do much more than they have in front of them today.
It's amazing. We've been talking about this since, 30 years. Imagine what we could have done. You know, you say, you know, maybe 20, 30 years from now, if we do the right things, it'll be solved. It's 20, 30 years later now. It's unbelievable.
Well, I think one of the great disappointments, maybe even scandals of the last 30 years is that we created the Department of Energy in 1976 precisely to reduce our dependence on oil. And yet we are twice as dependent on imported oil today as when we created the department. And you'd have to say that the success of that effort has not been obvious.
Reed Detchin, thank you very much for joining us this hour. Reed is the Executive Director of Energy Future Coalition. Thanks again.